the pedophiles, delivering justice unto men who prey sex on our children.
Men who have sacrificed the right to a life without pain.
I know how they look. I know how they think. I was one, for Christ's sake.
10 years ago, I had designs on my own kids. I knew that one day I might act on them. So to stop me, I shot myself in my own head. I'd killed the pedophile in me. Now I do the same for society. Because these men have chosen the way of the animal.
They don't deserve punishment. They deserve gunishment.
The Pedophile starts next week on 4, straight after Pedophile Island. 100 kids and an ex-offender on an island full of cameras. What's going to happen?
So brilliant. You know what? That Brass Eye, this was saying about Armando Iannucci, you know, Brass Eye, that kind of stuff. You can't do it today. And it was brilliant. It was totally brilliant. That it was edgy.
Foxy, you know. Dr. Fox saying, pedophiles share the same DNA as this crab.
Yes.
There's no evidence for this, but it is scientific fact.
That's amazing. That was one of the best shows on fucking telly, wasn't it? It was incredible.
Yeah. I love that bit where they're doing the one on drugs and Chris Morris is going out dealing with real street dealers, isn't he? Asking for Clarky cats and things like that. Don't know what you're talking about. Go away. Yeah, I want some triple sod and yellow bentines. God. Never heard of them. I only do coke.
Chris, he was amazing. He was very bold, Chris Morris, wasn't he? He didn't give a shit. Amazing.
Yellow bentines.
Do you know what? There were so many things back then. I have to say, I know it sounds like an old fogey and everything, but when we grew up and then into our teens and our 20s, there were so many good things on like that. Mm. So much better. Because it wasn't like obvious humour. It was all very satirical humour. It was all very political based, anti-establishment based and all that. And even like when you look back, I watched the other day, going back to something in the 80s, I watched like Five Go Mad in Dorset. You know,
oh yeah, the comics
did, and I actually thought it was brilliant. It stands up so well, and it's dead weird. You know, there's bits of it that are really weird, and it really fucking takes the piss. And all that stuff was great. It was original, wasn't it?
I know.
I don't think much is. I can't be so boring. The BBC, they're so lazy. All they want to do is put on crappy stand-ups live at the Apollo. You know, boring. Boring stand-up comics. Oh, God. Dated crap. You know, it's not even in the same league as of any of the good sort of mainstream stuff we used to have when we were kids, like the two Ronnies. And then the only other thing they want to do is get a couple of comedians doing outlandish things like Ramos and whatever his name is, the lad with the big teeth.
Ramesh Ranganathan.
Ramesh Ranganathan and his mate.
On a road trip with Jeff. That big teeth guy. Rob Beckett.
Rob Beckett. That's his fucking name. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't dislike him. I don't dislike it, and I don't dislike them. And I'm picking that out unfairly, probably, because they are quite funny lads. They seem like really nice lads, to be fair. Pair of them. But it's not like a great show, though, is it? It's not like...
No, it's not edgy.
It's not edgy at all. And it's not genius. It's not League of Gentlemen. It's not Partridge. It's not Brass Eye. It's not any of those things. There's nothing today. What is there today? I can't think of anything.
I don't know.
They don't want to spend any money on it. I mean, I haven't watched some of the things that everyone's saying are good. Things like Derry Girls and that. Doesn't appeal to me.
I've seen a few. Daisy likes that. And yeah, it is all right. I mean,
I'm sure it's okay. But I don't know, things like League and Partridge and that was like mega, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It was so good, and it still is.
Because I'm just endlessly watching clips and getting Freddie into it.
I'll tell you something, Lee, there's no doubt, my lad loves Partridge. He loves it. He gets it, thinks it's hilarious. He loves League of Gentlemen. He gets it, he thinks it's hilarious. But everything he's doing now is retro. So he's doing that. When he watches a comedy show, he'll think of that, he'll think of watch Partridge or League of Gents or something. And when it comes to music, what's he into? He's into everything we were into. Mm. You know, certainly on the indie scene.
Yeah.
He's getting into all my music, all of Jackie's music, and where we meet in the middle, and he's absorbing all that. He's not interested in anything new.
Well, this is one of the pleasures of being a parent, isn't it? Is that, you know, you're not forcing this stuff on them. You're introducing it to them and letting them make their own mind up. And because you know it's good, you know that there's a good chance that they're going to like it as well. I mean, yesterday I was showing Freddie that bit where Partridge meets Dan in the petrol station for the first time, and they start bonding, don't they? Because they've both got Lexi.
Yeah,
and read the Daily Mail, and and then Partridge goes, "Are you wearing links?" And he goes, "Voodoo." Partridge then goes, "Java." I mean, Freddie, you're doing that together. We're doing it tonight. I'll just say to him, "Are you wearing links?" And he'll lift his arm and go, "Voodoo," and I'll lift mine and go, "Java." Brilliant.
Fantastic.
So we keep watching that bit that he did on this time when he went back to his school. Did you ever see that?
Oh, yeah.
Superimposed his face on the little kid. Looks terrific.
Yeah.
But it's the bit where he's demonstrating the most effective way to thrash a child with a slipper. Have you seen it? Do you remember it?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Even going back with Partridge, looking at some of the things that he did, say, for Comic Relief and all that.
Yeah.
They're hilariously funny compared to most stuff you see today. I know I'm sounding like such an old fart, but I don't think this, and maybe I am biased because there's not much of anything that I would choose to watch. You know what I mean?
Mm.
If there was, say, a comedy show, a new sitcom, let's say, with that Scouse git that your brother used to play football with.
The thing is, John Bishop. Is that what you mean, lad?
I mean, I cannot even find him. I just do not find him funny at all. It does make it's so formulaic the way he does it. I mean, to be fair on him, fair play, he doesn't really ever go on television and do anything funny anymore. I think he's probably
realised. He seems to be doing charity marathons.
That's all he does, doesn't he? He probably knows. He's so fucking limited in what he could do, and he got away with it. Mm. Because that's what the public do. They go, "Oh, he's funny. He's funny at what he does." And they just buy up that standardised stand-up comedy shit, don't they? And there's some people
like
where
Jason Manford's and
Jason Manford, what a perfect example.
Yeah. And they're all right in their own right. They appeal very much to the mainstream, don't they? And
that's what it is.
I don't particularly mind them, but it's not my thing. You know, I'd rather see Stuart Lee.
Exactly.
I can't think of anyone else, to be honest, or Richard Herring. You know,
well, I always like Frankie Boyle. I love Frankie Boyle because he'll nail it. He'll say something horrendous, which is hilarious. When Frankie Boyle had his own like sitcom thing, was it Tramadol Nights or whatever it was called?
Oh yeah.
I thought it was brilliant because it was so edgy. It was so wrong. But it seems that not many TV companies or producers want to do it. They just don't want to stick it out there, do they? They don't want to put the neck out.
Well, Charlie Higson was talking about this on when he did his Scarred for Life podcast, and he was saying the 90s were a golden period for comedy. You know, they had some really great producers at the BBC.
Who just said, yeah, go with it, didn't they?
You know, gave them complete control. They were allowed to direct and produce their own shows, and they were trusted to do it, and there was none of this, you know, worrying about things that were a bit edgy and maybe a bit controversial. Though, you know, he did say himself that the Fast Show was never really like that. It was a sort of thing you could watch with your parents and that.
Yeah, yeah.
And the BBC were prepared to throw money at it, and he says they're just not anymore.
No.
And that's a really sad thing, and that period will probably never come back, he thinks.
And it's madness, because if you look what took place, Reeves and Mortimer, League of Gentlemen, I'm Alan Partridge, the day-to-day brass eye.
Yeah, well, he did make a point about that Channel 4 created loads of great shows as well.
Channel 4,
wanted
brilliant.
To compete with the BBC.
Yeah. I remember the very famous story about Python going into the BBC, and they said, oh, what do you want to do? Oh, we're not sure about this, so we're only going to give you a series. And they go, they're going to give us a series. You know what I mean? Like, they couldn't believe it, but they just let them do it. They just fucking let them do it. They didn't even ask any questions. And that's the thing, that put some trust in creative people to do something. But they're too frightened, and it's so politicised today because of all the Tories that fucking run the BBC now. And because the BBC are so shit scared of saying the wrong thing. It's so fucking diluted. It's just crap. Yeah. But it is part of the PC brigade that is preventing some of the things. Because to get the full extent of the sarcasm and the irony and the piss take out of establishment, you have to use some of these things, don't you? So the day-to-day would do some things that were stretching the boundaries of race or something. But
you mean Brass Eye?
Oh, Brass Eye, yeah, Brass Eye. Or gender or whatever, to make a point about the establishment and about society.
Yeah.
It wasn't taking the piss out of a black person. It wasn't taking the piss out of a woman. Or anything. But the problem today is, it's hard to make that joke.
Because they're all
worried about the... What they're worried about is the Alf Garnett effect. Mm-hmm. And ever since Alf Garnett... And they're worried about that. The Alf Garnett Love Thy Neighbour effect. Those...
The irony with Alf Garnett is...
That's the point I'm making, Lee. That's the point I'm making. Both Alf Garnett and Love Thy Neighbour were there with the intention of shining a reflection on the British public about the way British people were towards ethnic people and in society. And what happened is all the white people just laughed and thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, well, I suppose, yeah, it did backfire.
And that's why it's backfired. Johnny Spate is a real left. The whole point of Alf Garnett was that he was a total hypocrite. Mm. He's a working class guy who voted for Ted Heath, who hated black people and this, that, and the other. And it was his family always pointing out to him what a dick he was.
Yeah, that's right.
But the feeling was that people laughed with him, not at him. And that
I remember a story of Johnny Spate told about, he used to get people coming up to him, you know, usually your Mike Reed type Cockney wankers. Oh, yeah, he's great. I love Alf Garnett having a go at the blacks. About time someone did, you know. And Spate would go, I'm not having a go at the blacks. I'm having a go at dickheads like you.
Yeah. And I feel Johnny Spate has been much maligned as a consequence of that. And the thing is, the racism of the time, and there was racism, there's no doubt about it, but it was kind of almost innocent. It was kind of, the way it was done was sort of innocent. When, like, Spike Milligan did, was it called Curry and Chips?
Yeah.
Have you seen that? I mean, it's it's unbelievable. And then when he did his Q9 series, everyone got, oh, Spike Milligan, the comedy genius and all that. But he did loads of, like, kind of, like, racist stuff. The Pakistani Dalek or the Sikh Dalek with a turban on and all that.
You know, we go on about these old shows and say that the racist. Now, the one that often gets the most is Mind Your Language.
Well, I'll tell you, I promise you, this is a God's honest truth, and we can air this. You can air this whole segment, as far as I'm concerned, because it's the truth. I used to spend a lot of time with a Pakistani family in my teens and into my late teens and into my early 20s, actually. Used to go and stay there quite often because I was a real good Pakistani mate. And his family, their favourite TV shows were, without a shadow of a doubt, right, were Mind Your Language and It Ain't Half Hot Mum. Right?
Yeah.
And they were just full of, like, stereotypes, you know? And that was it. And quite right, it's not acceptable now. But back then, it was kind of, there was representation. And there was representation of stereotypes. Everybody was stereotyped in the 70s and 80s.
Of course they were, yeah.
It was everything. And that's why the sort of right-on comics, they went too far with it. Even they would appreciate that now. Because comedy needs some degree of stereotyping to work, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you do a character like Alan Partridge, you're stereotyping a lot of different things in people. He is a stereotype. In Love Thy Neighbour and in Alf Garnett, certainly, without a shadow of a doubt, was meant as a representation of piss-taking of the white working-class attitude. It was taking the piss out of the white working class for their naivety and their racism and their idiotic viewpoints on certain things in society. That's what it was. And it was the same with Jack Smethers in Love Thy Neighbour, because the black guy was always... The black guy, he was the conservative, right? And that was the switch. He was conservative and very modest in his approach. And Jack Smethers was the trade unionist who was like full of all this kind of hatred and ludicrous ideas of him being a savage and going to rape his wife. And that was actually part of the humour. They made jokes about him raping his wife. Those are the things that are like, so it's totally unacceptable today.
You know, there was things in Only Fools and Horses that have been cut out now.
Where
he calls this Asian character the Turbinator.
It's not meant
any harm. I mean, I'm not sure a lot of Sikh people would find that funny.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like gatekeeping by white people saying, oh, no, absolutely, we can't have that. We need to protect the little Asian people. It's so patronising.
Yeah. Well, the major in Fawlty Towers comes out with this really racist stuff.
But he's a major.
Yeah, exactly. He's pointing out exactly what that character was. But the reality was that Monty Python did have like fairly racist sketches. I mean, they had a character, you know, when they all dressed up as women screaming at each other. Mm. And they had a character called Mrs. Niggerbaiter.
Oh, God.
Hello, Mrs. Niggerbaiter. And that was a thing that was done in Monty Python. And that was acceptable. But that was the time. Back in the day, that was acceptable. That was part of it in those days. And the goodies is rife with casual racism.
But it wasn't hateful. You know, you can call it naive, you can call it offensive even, if you like, but you can't really call it hateful.
And it was like full of casual sexism too. All of those things were.
This is how society evolves. It looks back at what it used to be like and it decides that, well, let's move on from that.
But what we should be doing is, having gay characters, having black characters, having Asian characters, having a whole gamut of things with new and original and interesting stories. But write stuff today about, great, have a black James Bond. What a great idea. Have a black Doctor Who. That's happening. Fantastic. Good. Quite right too. But if you're going to do something about a gulag in Russia, don't put bloody Sam Jackson in it, you know, because that's not real. Yeah. That's totally fictitious. You know, don't do something, right, about the Douglas Jardine cricket team going to Australia and having Derek Griffiths. Because that didn't happen. What gets me, sadly, is that all of these, especially these companies like Disney, I mean, Disney are fucking shocking, aren't they? I mean, they're such a corporate fucking shell of a company. They're horrible, really. All that Marvel shit, all the overstretching of all the Star Wars shit, blah, blah, blah. All the fantasy bollocks. The reality is, when it comes to real stories, there's loads of amazing real stories out there. I mean, I've heard a couple recently. Amazing, incredible stories. Nobody is picking them up because it's all about the commercial value of things, isn't it? Always. Yeah. So they always think, you get this fucking idiotic suited idiot who's an accountant, really. And he's going, we'll just get another Star Wars thing going. We'll do another front. Yeah, we'll do that. And they don't think, hang on, what about a great little story? We could do that at tuppence halfpenny price compared to all the ridiculous amount of money you're going to spend on that shit. That nobody really wants. Who wants another Aquaman film? Fuck off. Who wants any of that shit?
I know.
But we can make a really interesting story about these characters here.
Was it Martin Scorsese that said that they're not real films, this Marvel?
Well, he says they're like a ride, aren't they? Like a fucking joyride at an amusement park. And he's got a point. Because I have to say, I started trying to watch a couple of those Marvel films, right? And I said, another fight scene. Oh, fucking hell. Oh, another fight. Oh, fucking hell. Another fight scene. Fucking hell. Where's the story? What's going on here? I'd totally lost track of it. The last couple of Star Wars films, the same. Boring. I was so bored. I was shitting myself of boredom out of it. So yeah, boring.
I know a couple of Star fans that still can't get over the last one. Or was it the last one? I don't know which one it was, but
what dirge the last one was. It made no sense. It was absolute tripe. But I'll watch hours of, say, something like Homeland, like we've been watching Homeland, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's the intricate storylines and the dialogue and the plot. Some of it is it gets kind of crazy, really, but it's such a brilliantly made TV series. It's perfectly made, really.
Yeah.
The acting's fantastic. The quality is fantastic. I've been watching that Slow Horses as well on the...
Yeah, Michelle's always trying to get me into that.
Love it. And, oh, God, Gary Oldman's hilarious in it. And it's, again, it's intriguing. It's a bit far-fetched, but as his Homeland. But the plot lines are great. The intricacy of it's great. The humour's great. Fantastic. Give me stuff... You know, maybe a middle-aged guy, but I think young people as well, I think they're so maligned. They think, oh, they're just going to want this. We'll throw this at them. And yeah, there is a lot of young people that like it. And yes, they do like the Star Wars toys and they do like this. But give them a really good story to latch onto and watch how a young person will spark into life getting it, you know, or get an idea that doesn't need to be fast-paced. But it needs to have a kind of authenticity about it. I remember my lad and his mate watching Close Encounters of the Third Kind, right? Which, if you watch it, is not a fast film.
No.
It's a very slow film. It's very paced. It's got some very kind of strange moments when the family breakdown takes place and Richard Dreyfuss's character sort of starts going kind of mad and all that. And it's about 2.5 hours long. They watched every minute of that. I still have this image of them. They were so little at the time, Leo and George, so little. And they were there at the side of the settee watching the film and they were just completely entranced by it because it was beautifully made. It took the subject very seriously. It wasn't full of action every 5 minutes. It was full of intrigue and mystery. It's a brilliant film. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you got to do. You've got to tell a really interesting story. Tell it well. And don't feel the need to pack it every 10 minutes.
You know, these fight scenes and this overuse of CGI are put in there because they haven't got a good story.
They haven't got out, have they?
They can't think of one, or they're rushing these films into production.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to take advantage of the time and the popularity that they have at the moment and the audience that actually goes to see them, you know. But they don't try hard enough to make them intelligent you know, I mean, I'd say Nolan, Christopher Nolan's Batman films, that, you know, they are a completely different animal to the Marvel stuff.
I'm sure, yeah, there's no doubt. I need to revisit them, really. I need to watch.
They're not perfect, but
let me give you an example of something that we watched together as a family a few weeks ago. And, you know, obviously, okay, my son now is nearly 16 and he's got a very old head. He's got a very old head on his shoulders as well. But that said, we knew that he was going to love this film. We said, let's put on Talented Mr. Ripley. See what you think of it. Now, there is a film full of nuance, full of like kind of base bisexuality as well.
Never seen it, you know.
Oh, it's it's a terrific thriller.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a film that
I've seen the sequel actually, which is. What's it called? Ripley's Game, I think it's called.
Yeah, well, she wrote, she's written a few Ripley's books, hasn't she? But what's the original, which is, I didn't realise they'd actually made a sequel to it. But
John Malkovich, isn't it?
Obviously. Was that good? Did you enjoy it? Was it good?
Yeah, it was all right. Yeah, my mate recommended it to me and lent me it.
Well, watch the original film because it's great. Mm. It's really good. It's a really well-made film. It looks fantastic because of all the locations. It's just a great thriller. It's a great story. And I think that's really the point about anything. It's you know, these great stories to be told. I mean, I watched the most fabulous film of the day. I would recommend it to everybody, especially at Christmas. And happy Christmas, listeners. I watched a film called The Holdovers. Now, the thing is, I don't even know if it's available to watch in Britain at the moment. I'm quite fortunate in how I was able to watch it. But it's Alexander Payne who made Sideways. He's a really good filmmaker. Paul Giamatti, who's one of the best actors in the world. He's just a brilliant character actor. And it's just a fantastic story about this private school where there's a group of boys who can't go home for Christmas. And they're stuck with this grumpy professor played by Paul Giamatti, mm-hmm. who is a pain in the arse. And then in the end, it goes down to just one student, him and one student, and this dinner lady together, having to share Christmas together. And it is one of the most, it's one of the most beautiful, funny, sad, brilliantly acted, performed, the look of it. It's like it's 1975. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think it's based in 1970 or 71. Honestly, Lee, it is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm just looking it up now. Yeah.
And Paul Giamatti should win the Academy Award for Best Actor. He really should. It's the perfect comedy stroke pathos performance. And there's an example of a completely original story that's been
taught. And people are crying out for this sort of stuff, aren't they? That's why, you know, I still listen to Commode, you know, because...
Yeah, yeah. Dead right.
Commode is obviously someone who champions these types of films.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because,
you know, you've got to watch this. It'll pass you by. It will, you know, it'll be on for like 2 weeks at your local cinema.
I don't think he's reviewed Holdovers yet because I don't think it's out until January in Britain, which is crazy since it's set over Christmas. Why it's not been released in Britain before Christmas, well, they are. But it is fabulous. And I'm going to watch Killers of the Flower Moon soon too, which I've got high hopes for that. The Holdovers is a nigh perfect film. It's like a 90, it is so like a 1970s film. Mm-hmm. It is like a really classy 1970s film. And that is what Alexander Payne was trying to do. And that is the point. All the films that were out in the 1970s, there was just so many brilliant films.
Yeah, yeah.
So many brilliant one-off films. We do get really good TV today, and I really appreciate that, with great stories and great storytelling. But when it comes to films, we don't always get what we had. But we still get gems. And I think, I just wish that the powers that be would put a little bit more effort into sponsoring and putting out that kind of high-quality content instead of constantly going down this fucking toilet of commerciality. Because so much of these really commercial films, they're not that commercial, are they? Because they cost that much to make in the first
place. Yeah. This is it. Yeah. This is why the Indiana Jones one was one of the most expensive films ever made. That's never going to make its money back.
It's a flop, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's bullshit. Whereas if there was lots and lots of smaller, really well-crafted films that were interesting, diversity, and there was still that opportunity there for people like Spike Lee, you know, coming through in the 80s. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And he's made some incredibly interesting films, Spike Lee. I'm a huge fan. And that's really what you know, needs to be happening more of.
Yeah. Well, I think the Marvel films have sort of, they're petering out now, aren't they? I think they've done.
I think, thank God.
Them, if not all of them. But like you say, things like Aquaman, which I know is a different franchise, they're still appearing.
Is that DC? I don't really know.
Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah. So thank you for listening, everybody. And I just want to say thanks for all your support you've given us this year. It's been fantastic to hear your comments, and some of the reviews that we've had have been brilliant, and we really do appreciate your support. So this might be the last pod of the year, but rest assured we'll be back next year with more of the same.
Yeah. So Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and thanks again for the lovely reviews. Tell your mates and tell your mates' mates, and get it out there. Get the Something Wicked podcast out there, because we love doing these podcasts. And we hope you love listening to them and look forward to doing more in the new year. So all the best,
and
everybody.
If there's anything you would like us to cover or talk about, then please let us know. Because
let us know.
We're always open to discussing new and interesting things. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye. On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a partridge in a pear tree. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me
two turtle doves and a partridge in a pear tree. That's me. On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
This should have been moved. Can we
fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me
four
calling birds.
Can we stop? Just cut the music. This is, we can't do this.
Turtle doves, Alan Partridge in a pear tree.
Keep clapping, it looks good.